Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. Lauren L. of the High Desert here. Thank you for tuning in. It is currently Sunday, November 15th, 2015, 8:30 p.m. Lauren L. of the High Desert is brought to you by GrowWithLaurenL.com. That's my own personal online marketing services. I assist businesses of all sizes, even individuals, in helping to develop their online presence, whether it's social media, email outreach, or just getting them to come up on search engines. I also do virtual assistant tasks. If there's something that you need to get done, it's all done online or in computer programs, then I'm able to assist on that as well. If you'd like to know more about my services, you can go to growwithlaurenl.com. I really appreciate it. It's what keeps this show going and brings me here to share information with you. I also want to thank B&L Transmissions of Cathedral City, California. They sponsored Lauren L. of the High Desert for a couple months. And so if you need some assistance, B&L Transmissions is in the Lower Desert. And I want to give them a big thank you again. Lauren L. of the High Desert.com is always looking for sponsorship, advertising, whatever it is that you want to promote or market in the area. I welcome you to contact me and learn more about the options I have available. I have a lot of opportunities available. I'm also very versatile in promoting whatever it is that you want to promote. So if you'd like to know more, go to LaurenL.com and you can contact me directly there, and I look forward to hearing from you. I'm also seeking local artists, authors, anyone that produces their own work here in the Morongo Basin and other desert regions in the Southwest U.S. I am developing an online store, at least the area on my website, to promote local artists. And so I'm looking for anyone who's interested. I'm going to start doing more promotion through Facebook and other platforms and connecting with different groups. But Lauren L. of the High Desert has been receiving so much traffic within the past year, and I know that the traffic's just going to continue increasing, that I am looking to promote full artists and authors and related people on my website. I figure why not? Because the website's getting so much traffic, it's a great way to gain exposure for whatever it is that you do. So if you're interested in that, you can also contact me, Lauren L. of the High Desert.com. Kicking off the show today with a piece of history, as usual, coming from a booklet published by the Morongo Basin Historical Society as well as the 29 Palms Historical Society. This is the Morongo Basin 100-Year Project, 1910 to 2010. And this particular story I'm featuring today is from the year 1943. The article title is Keys and Bagley Shootout. Here's what the article reads. Keys, this is my last warning to stay off my property, was posted on the dirt road as Bill Keys drove back to the Desert Queen Ranch. Keys got out for a closer look. As he walked up a rise, he saw a man moving toward him, pistol in hand. It was Worth Bagley, a neighbor who had threatened him before. Keys ran back to his car and retrieved his rifle. A gunshot from Bagley just missed, and Keys returned fire, fatally wounding Bagley. The trial that followed found Keys guilty of manslaughter and sentenced to prison in San Quentin. He maintained his innocence, and with the help of his wife, Frances, and an old friend, Earl Stanley Gardner, proved it to the state. He received a full pardon. Here is where Worth Bagley bit the dust at the hand of W.F. Keys on May 11, 1943, is the marker bill put up, which he placed at the site of the shootout. Art Kidwell's book, Ambush, The Story of Bill Keys, tells the story of this 1943 event. That sounds like a dangerous situation to be in, and also to fatally wound someone just by reading a sign right off the bat off the road. That's an interesting story. I am moving on to local events. I am always seeking local events. Lauren L. of the High Desert.com does have an agenda to what I promote. I promote specifically events relating to construction in the area, any kind of construction, whether it's a structure, also something like the sewage system changes happening in Yucca Valley. Those are events that I look for, anything hosted by the county. I'm also interested in local groups pertaining to sustainability, environmental conservation, environmental awareness in general. So if you are promoting events like that, then please let me know. You can email me at laurenlhighdesert@gmail.com. I don't have many events listed for the next coming weeks. Maybe events come in. They come in all the time, sometimes at the last minute. But here's what I have at this point in time. The Homestead Valley Community Council will be hosting a meeting on Monday, November 16th, starting at 3 p.m., and this will be at the Flamingo Heights Community Center, located at Paris Street, Yucca Valley, California, 92284. Community meetings are always a great way to hear about what's going on in that specific area and a great way to meet people in the neighborhood and hear what the concerns are of people. I've been to a number of community meetings in the area since I've been here, and it's really interesting how people come together and communicate about different issues. On November 20th, starting at 7 p.m., there will be a Black Rock lecture, and the topic is Losing Ground, the Displacement of Kaweah People in the 19th Century. This will be taking place at the Black Rock Ranger Station, located at 9800 Black Rock Canyon, Yucca Valley, California. Again, this will be starting at 7 p.m., and the presentation is given by Betty Meltzer, who is an author and historian. This should be a really interesting topic, and for me personally, having grown up in Desert Hot Springs, California, this is a particular topic that interests me. I personally do not recall learning much of the natives in this area. If I did, it was in elementary school where I can't remember much of the information, but this should be really fun. The Black Rock Lecture Series is always really sophisticated and a great way to meet people who are interested in these topics in the area. On December 5th, there will be a public meeting on the Bureau of Land Management's WEMO transportation plan. It will start at 2 p.m. and go until 5 p.m. It's taking place at the Community United Methodist Church, located at 6213 East Parkway in Joshua Tree. And here's a brief description of the event. The Alliance for Responsible Recreation will be hosting a public meeting to discuss the proposal of the Federal Bureau of Land Management to dramatically increase access for off-roading vehicles in our rural communities, allowing ORVs to ride on our public land, or public roads, private property, and public lands. Law enforcement cannot deal with existing problems with off-road vehicle trespass, and now the BLM wants to double the mileage of off-road vehicle routes in our communities. The meeting will feature a detailed explanation of the BLM's Western Mojave, also known as WEMO, route management plan, maps of the network of proposed off-road vehicle routes in the Morongo Basin, and an opportunity for the public to ask questions and voice their concerns. If you would like more information, please go to orvwatch.com. This has been an ongoing issue in the area, and Pat Flanagan, who is also on the Morongo Basin MAC board, has done extensive research on this project and has put together really well-researched presentations. So I encourage you to go to this event because it's just really fascinating to learn about the world of off-road vehicles if you aren't too familiar with it. Personally speaking, I have never really been involved with off-road vehicles ever, and it hasn't been of much concern to me personally. But once I've come up here to the high desert and I do see a lot of off-roaders, a lot of people who come up here and have the concept that riding can take place anywhere on any open land, it's really interesting to speak with people and to see, to speak with people who are knowledgeable and explain that there are rules here, but then also to speak to the other people from other locations who are from out of the area who think that they can just ride wherever they want here. It's a big issue in the area for locals and for a lot of people, for the wildlife. So this is an event that will explain more about that. On December 5th, there will be DJ Kitten Cat's Dark Party. I'm throwing this in there. This is actually an event that I personally am hosting, partially to have a good time and also for my birthday. And I am having a friend come from LA who's going to help DJ. I'm going to put together a list of songs to play as well. I actually am DJ Kitten Cat, And so the theme of the night is electronic, post-punk, alt-rock, everything from the 70s to today. Bands like Oingo Boingo, Sisters of Mercy, Interpol, Jesus and Mary Chain, Depeche Mode, Jane's Addiction. Some of you may be familiar with these groups. Personally, they're all in my favorite genres of music, so I'm really excited about this event. And all proceeds go to the Beatnik Lounge. It is free, but I am going to have a jar out to encourage donations, and everything will go to the Beatnik Lounge because the Beatnik Lounge is letting me host the event. The Beatnik Lounge has also been a location for a lot of local events in the area that I personally have enjoyed, and I know that a lot of residents here have enjoyed. So I'm really happy to support the Beatnik Lounge. And again, this event will be December 5th, starting at 8 p.m. It will be at the Beatnik Lounge in Joshua Tree, California, and it will be a lot of fun. I invite everybody. And that's all I have for events. Again, if there's any events that you would like me to know about to put on my calendar, you can message me at laurenlhighdesert@gmail.com. I did go to a few events this weekend. Actually, it was a pretty busy weekend. I did go to the Desert Bighorn Sheep presentation that took place at the Old Schoolhouse in 29 Palms. This was a part of the Old Schoolhouse lecture series. And this lecture did take place on, what was the date? Oh, I didn't write down the date. It was Friday, November 13th. And the speaker was Mark Jorgensen. He is actually an author. It was a lot of information from his book, Desert Bighorn Sheep, Wilderness Icon. This book is available for purchase. And I was really excited about this event because I personally have never looked into bighorn sheep very much at all. I hear about them all the time. I remember growing up hearing about bighorn sheep, everything, any kind of construction on the outskirts of the Coachella Valley. There was always concerns about the bighorn sheep. So I was excited to learn more about the bighorn sheep, how do they survive, what's certain features from them. So Mark Jorgensen went into detail about that, and just a little bit about Mark Jorgensen. He is actually from Borrego Springs, California. That's where he currently resides. But he was a former superintendent of Banta Borrego State Park, and he was also an honorary mayor of Borrego Springs, California. And he's very enthusiastic about bighorn sheep. That's a topic that he loves to learn about. And so I did take some notes about the bighorn sheep. I'll go over them pretty quickly. I thought a lot of this detail was interesting. So here are some points from his presentation. He noted that bighorn sheep are doing better than they have in the past 75 years. There have been efforts to help bighorn sheep survive here in the Desert California region. There's all kinds of wild sheep in the United States. And I posted a map on Facebook that he put up, but there are wild sheep located here in Southern California, up through Nevada, up to Utah, further up north in the Oregon, Washington areas, and other locations. And they all are different based upon where they live because they have to adapt to whatever the climate is. So we are in a very hot climate. We have the desert bighorn sheep, which are adapted to a very hot climate. But then we have wild sheep that are located in very cold climates. So they are built differently so that they can survive in the colder climate. Bighorn sheep are one of the most popular pet troglodytes by Native Americans. You'll find them most often. In the summer, they tend to move closer to water holes, while in the fall, they'll move south. During winter, bighorn sheep can go months without water. Their horns, which are the first thing that are noticed about the bighorn sheep, are used for protection and food collecting. The males are the ones that have the curved horns. They can weigh approximately 25 to 30 pounds when they're mature. Females have shorter horns. So that's how you can tell them apart. Approximately 60 years ago, 800 burros were airlifted out of the Grand Canyon, and the bighorn sheep population increased. Female lambs tend to stay with the mother for years, while the males may leave after being weaned. It was also noted that males sometimes will return to the mother, but once the next birth occurs, the male will move on. Lambs have a 20 to 40% survival rate. It is pretty tough for them to survive. I thought this was interesting. Wild sheep always want to be up high. So if they see you while you're climbing on a mountain ridge, they're going to always climb higher than you. They want to look down on you. It's rare that you'll ever see a mountain goat or a bighorn sheep looking up at you. Mountain lions are a big threat to bighorn sheep. In one area, it was noted that 68% of wild sheep were killed by mountain lions. Some states actually target mountain lions and try to kill them off because they are such a threat to the bighorn sheep. Coyotes also are a threat to the bighorn sheep, but they specifically target sick lambs or lambs in general. During the gold rush, approximately 480,000 domesticated sheep were imported to the West, and they were sold as wool and meat to the miners. Domesticated sheep are more likely to introduce a disease to wild sheep, and a disease that's introduced by domesticated sheep can wipe out so many bighorn sheep. So it's really important to keep domesticated sheep away from the bighorn sheep because they can just devastate the population. Bighorn sheep love seeds from cat's claw. The leaves and nuts are high in protein. The bighorn sheep will also bash barrel cactus to collect moisture or liquid if they're really thirsty. Water holes were heavily used by man and wildlife. Could no longer access. So at one point, water sources were reaching the surface of the earth and the desert region, and these water holes would attract all kinds of wildlife and would supply them the water that they need. But when man started to come to the desert, they took over the water holes, and so there was no longer water available to the wildlife, and it has made it difficult for wildlife to continue their populations. Water storage has been introduced to bring back water to wildlife. There are approximately 10 barrels at Anza-Borrego State Park that are filled by rainfall, and Mark Jorgensen mentioned that there's a debate about these storage containers. They're actually storage containers, like barrels, pretty huge barrels. And so when it rains, they'll collect water, and there's a system there so that the water is supplied to the wildlife. And it was noted that some people don't support this system because it's not natural. But at the same time, it was noted that man came, took something that was natural, the natural water holes, and made it unavailable to the wildlife. So in a way, this is bringing back water that would have been there. I don't know about barrels or water storage being at Joshua Tree National Park. He also noted that there's an overpass that was built near Hoover Dam for wildlife to cross a highway. I don't know what the specific highway is, but I did post a picture in the article that I'm going to be posting on laurenelofthehighdesert.com. It's interesting to see. He said that there's been approximately 21,000 bighorn sheep crossing that have been noted on the overpass. So this overpass is a overpass that appears natural to wildlife. So they will cross this overpass. It was put there so that they are not cut off by the highway. And so this overpass has appeared to be successful as a location for wildlife to get from one area to the other near the highway. This was a really interesting presentation. I actually support the Old Schoolhouse lecture series a lot because they always have a very down-to-earth lecture, and the speakers are always very friendly, and they talk a lot about topics such as wildlife and culture, history, and it just gives a lot of insight about how the valley developed to be what it is today, what at one point were important topics in the valley. That's something that is also interesting to know. It's easy to live here today with air conditioners and vehicles, but it is really interesting to learn about previous people who've lived here, who have lived here over the past century, who have had to deal with challenges and difficulties. So the Old Schoolhouse Lecture Series really emphasizes this about how difficult it was to live here, what were the kinds of developments that went on here to bring the Morongo Basin to what it is today. And so I encourage you to keep up with them. There's a mailing list, so they'll let you know what's happening. I also attended the Fall Gratitude event at the Mojave Desert Land Trust, which is located in Joshua Tree, California. This took place on Saturday, November 14th. And again, it was at the Mojave Desert Land Trust headquarters, which Mojave Desert Land Trust used to be located closer to downtown Joshua Tree. Now they moved into a larger structure that is closer to Yucca Valley. It's still in Joshua Tree, but the structure is really noted. If you ever go there, it's very beautiful. And the architect was actually at the event. I do not have his name on hand, but he was there. So a lot of people love the structure there, and it's really great to see. This event was a general celebration for the Mojave Desert Land Trust. Again, it was called Fall Gratitude. There was actually a lecture that was given by a local rancher. His name is Billy Mitchell, and he's lived in the area for a long time. He gave history behind ranching in the area, conflicts that have happened in the past, how ranching has become difficult over time due to, this is interesting, ranching has become more difficult over time due to environmental conservation efforts. He noted that the advancement of desert tortoise protection has made it difficult for ranchers to continue their ranches and their style of living. So there's not as many ranchers here in the Morongo Basin as what there used to be, but he is still ranching. He still has cattle, and so he shared information about that, and it was really interesting. Him and his family also gave a demonstration of doing a lasso demonstration. I don't know all the terminology personally. I don't have much experience in it, but he did give more information about working within horses. There were horse rides for children as well. And then there were final words that were given towards the closing of the presentation, which was given by Danielle Segura, who's the Mojave Desert Land Trust Executive Director. She was really excited to announce her happiness of working at the land trust, and she was very excited about the advancements of the land trust over the past year. There was also Supervisor James Ramos, who I was surprised to see. And then the guest of honor was David Smith, who is the superintendent of Joshua Tree National Park. And Smith did say that the Mojave Desert Land Trust has played a critical role in his progress at Joshua Tree National Park, and he was very proud to work with the organization. I personally have been keeping up with the Mojave Desert Land Trust for probably 6 to 7 years, and I really support what they do. If you're unaware of what the land trust does, they primarily buy up large parcels of land to connect wildlife linkages. And so they've been very, very successful at doing that. On top of that, Mojave Desert Land Trust also provides a lot of education events here in the Morongo Basin to the community, often for free. They also do restoration events. So if an area has been run down by off-roaders are starting to impact a certain area, they will actually put together an event and pull volunteers together to do restoration. And I actually did go to a restoration event not too long ago, or it was a few months ago, and it was just a lot of fun. I got to meet a lot of really interesting people in the area. We got to talk quite a bit. It was a really good workout. We actually had to use picks and shovels. And what had happened was there was a road that had started because off-roaders started using this particular path, and you could tell that there had been consistent off-roading there. They had pretty well. So we took desert plants that had already died that were just laying on the ground, and we took them and put them in the ground, sticking up as though to make it look like it blended in with the area. And it was quite a bit of work, but after a few hours, the area actually did blend in. The path was relatively difficult to see if you're driving by, and I talked with the woman previously about it, and she said that the path is still, it hasn't been used, and so the restoration has been doing very well. So those are just a few things that Mojave Desert Land Trust does. And they started back in 2005. I was reading a little bit into their history. It started off as a group of people who were just concerned about conservation in the area. And so they started the Mojave Desert Land Trust again, 2005, 10 years ago. And it's just amazing to see the land trust become what it is today, this major organization that is known all throughout the Morongo Basin and beyond the Coachella Valley and other noted locations. They have connections with groups in Los Angeles, San Diego. So, again, it was just really fun to go to their event and to see people come together and celebrate the Mojave Desert Land Trust. Finally, I'm going to close with a quick article and try to fit this in here. I did not make it to this event, but I really wanted to. The preparation for El Nino meeting that took place on Monday, November 9th, and this took place in Yucca Valley. I did pull up the High Desert Star article, so I'm going to just read through it really quickly for you. I don't have the details because I wasn't in attendance, so here's the details for you. It was published on November 11th, 2015. Audience members winced and groaned as a car tumbled through a flash flood on the screen in front of them. "How deep do you think this is?" a man near the screen asked. Shouts of 3 or 4 feet came back to him. Then the shaky footage showed the car's driver struggling to get to his feet. When he stood, some of the audience gasped. The water that had overturned his car and was carrying boulders bouncing like marbles was rolling just below his knees. "It doesn't take much," Mike Annacucci said. Annacucci, manager of San Bernardino County's Office of Emergency Services, was one of the 6 experts in weather and emergency who spoke to a room of about 200 people at the Yucca Valley Community Center Monday. The topic was what to expect from El Nino weather this winter, and the message was to be ready for rain. Weather forecasters are predicting this winter will most likely bring a strong El Nino. That doesn't necessarily mean the storms themselves will be stronger. There may be more of them. Daniel Burke, a meteorologist with the National Weather Service, said El Nino is a weather cycle characterized by warmer surface temperatures in the Pacific Ocean. Burke explained, ocean temperatures 1.5 degrees above average usually signal a strong El Nino is on the way. Last week, those temps were more than 3 degrees above normal, and forecasters predict over 3 months they will average out to 2 and 2.5 degrees above normal, which is among the strongest we've ever had, Burke said. Computer models all predict a winter of frequent storms in the Southwest, petering out early next year. "I can't tell you for sure it will be wetter here, but I'm pretty confident it will be," Burke told the audience. "We're also expecting a better than average chance it will be warmer winter than we're used to." I'm out of time to continue reading this article, but it was pointed out that there will be sandbags provided for free from the county, but it is a limited supply, and that sandbags will also be sold at Home Depot in Yucca Valley. So if you're interested in preparing, you can contact the county. I'm trying to get their information. I can't find it here on the website, but San Bernardino. So you can get in contact with them to learn more about El Niño preparation. Thank you so much for tuning in, and I hope all of you have a great week. Again, if there's any events, anything that I should cover, let me know. Lauren L. of thehighdesert.com. Thank you so much.